Potential candidates for president are trying to get connected with donors to support them through the primary season, and a new report from a previous campaign may give an indication of the kind of money that could be at play.
Bayfield County passed a one-year moratorium on large-scale farms yesterday evening as an Iowa outfit is looking to build a hog farm there with around 24,000 animals. Supporters say it gives the county more time to study risks and oversight with large farms. Opponents are concerned about how existing farms could be affected. Danielle Kading reports.
Okay, we'll get that.
Officers turned people away as a crowd of around 200 people lined the walls of the Bayfield County boardroom last evening. They spoke for and against the moratorium stemming from Iowa-based Reichsview Farms' plans to build a large-scale hog farm 8 miles from Lake Superior. People who support this moratorium want more time to study the risks of large farms, including things like manure running into the lake. Jim Zorn lives a half mile from where Reichs would build.
We need a surveillance system. We need baseline data. We need to know where that water will go. We need to have our wells tested. We need to have a protocol set up to test not just for sulfates, but for hormones and pharmaceuticals.
Zorn says the issue isn't whether people are for or against farming, but several farmers said they were frustrated over comments from people who have no firsthand experience with farms and how they're regulated. Jessica Pierce raises beef and hogs with her family.
I am most concerned about the impact a moratorium will have on other farms, such as myself. Even if I want to build a new barn to house my cattle.
Mason farmer Clay Burdett says a moratorium sends a message to farmers that the county doesn't want them to succeed.
A farm has to grow and adapt to changing trends and new technologies. That is how we better ourselves and our animals.
The board cut off public comment after an hour. That drew protest from Red Cliff tribal member Gretchen Morris. As officers escorted her from the meeting, Morris says a large-scale farm would threaten their rights to hunt, fish, and gather.
You know, I don't want to have to force you out of here. But
you're violating our treaty rights. Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, 1854 treaty. We will not allow it.
Board members asked their legal counsel about the possibility that Reichs could sue over the moratorium and whether it already has a legal right to build. Bayfield County Corporation Counsel Linda Coleman says that remains unclear.
There's no way anybody could get up here today and tell you they are not vested, absolutely 100%.
Bayfield's attorney Glenn Stoddard spoke on behalf of around 3,000 people who signed a petition supporting a moratorium. Stoddard says it will end up in court either way.
But I'm telling you right now, when you can fill a room like this and you've got tribes and you've got people from a city like Ashland and other people who are concerned about it, you bet there's going to be litigation.
Board members also asked Reichsview Farms representatives about how they run and the risks involved. Reichsview Farms Swine Operations Director Gene Nome says they would be proud to operate in Bayfield County.
We plan to continue to do livestock farming in a same, safe, and professional manner that we do now and that we do in the state of Iowa.
The moratorium passed by the board affects new farms of 1,000 animals or more and existing farms seeking to grow. The moratorium does not apply to farms that have a legal right to build. Bayfield County Board Member Bill Bussey says that distinction gives the county time to find out more.
We're basically deferring our decision on whether Reichs is grandfathered or not.
Reichs Nome declined to comment on the moratorium, saying they'll have to evaluate the decision. A county committee will now form to study the impact large-scale farms have on groundwater, surface water, and air quality. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio in Superior.
Last fall's congressional election is a few months behind us, but when it comes to the money behind the race, the numbers are still coming out. The latest numbers show that it was the most expensive midterm election in history, even though fewer people actually made donations than in previous elections.
Russ Choma joins us now to sort out those spending numbers. He's a money and politics reporter for the Center for Responsive Politics. The new report on money in that congressional race is online at opensecrets.org. Russ, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the big numbers. How much money went into that congressional race nationwide?
So the 2014 midterms, we counted they cost $3.77 billion, which was an all-time high for a midterm election.
And are we talking direct donations to candidates, or does this include outside groups as well?
This includes outside groups, includes money to candidates, includes PACs, super PACs, 527s, and it's spending. So anything that was disclosed as having being spent, we got. So there's a lot of money we don't necessarily know where it came from, but we know it was spent, so we counted that. There is probably $100 to $200 million at least that was spent that was never officially recorded anywhere. So that's not in our calculation because you can't count what hasn't been reported.
Yeah, what kind of money is out there that isn't disclosed at all that you wouldn't be able to report on?
So, I mean, that's the truly outside, truly dark money. you know, if you make an explicitly political ad, no matter who you are, whether you're a super PAC or a candidate or even one of these politically active nonprofits, which are sort of mysterious as to where they get their money from, if you make one of those explicit ads, you've got to report that it was made and that you spent money airing it. So, but if one of these ads was one of these sort of groups was able to sort of get around some of the rules and some of the language about explicit terms that are used to advocate for or against a candidate, that might not have to be reported.
We'll get a little more into where exactly the money is going. But one of the interesting things here, a record-setting election, as you said, but fewer people are actually donating money. How does that work out?
Right. That's one of probably the most fascinating thing that we found. Every election that we've looked at, and going back to 1990, every election has been more expensive than the one before. Every midterm is more expensive. Every presidential election is more expensive. But every time, there's also been more donors than the one before. This is the first midterm where there have actually been fewer identifiable donors than the election before, even though that the total cost went up. And the average donation, or the average amount that an individual donated, went up to an all-time high. Of about $2,600 was the average amount that was donated by someone we could identify.
And that was a fairly substantial jump over the previous average, right?
That's right. In 2010, the average was about $1,900. And we figured we lost about 96,000 donors in between the 2010 and the 2014 election. So about 11% of the donors in 2010, 11% fewer.
So it sounds like a shrinking pool of smaller donors, a growing pool of people who are donating a lot of money. So all these various entities, the candidates, the outside groups in particular, I guess, relying more and more on fewer and fewer big spenders.
That's right. We're saying that there was more money went in and fewer people paid for it.
So how does it break down versus, donating directly to candidate X or the national party or, the congressional group of that party or these outside groups? What are the percentages there?
So the candidate, giving to candidates is still in the parties and sort of like the hard system, hard money system that's, regulated and where everything's disclosed. That's still the bulk of the money. It was about $2.7 billion. About $888 million was spent by House candidates and about $685 million was spent by Senate candidates. And then the parties spent probably about another $1 billion, a little bit more than that. And so, the bulk of the money is still in that system, but it's a smaller piece of the pie than it used to be. We figure outside groups accounted for about 13 or 14% of the spending this time, which doesn't sound like a huge amount, but it's a growing amount. And considering that most of these groups couldn't have existed before 2010, and so this is really only the second midterm that they've been available to people, that's pretty significant that they've already taken that chunk.
And you mentioned things changing over the last handful of years. How much of this do you think comes from the impact of big Supreme Court decisions on campaign contributions, including Citizens United?
I mean, I think it absolutely has a lot to do with that. I mean, like I was saying, a lot of these groups just couldn't have existed. And the amount of spending from super PACs has just really, really exploded. I mean, there were other forms of outside spending before 2010, but the groups that we're seeing spending the most simply didn't exist. And the two largest, the largest individual donor in this last election was a guy named Tom Steyer, who donated about $73 million. And in 2012, it was a guy named Sheldon Adelson who donated about $92 million. You just could not have made those donations prior to Citizens United. So, I mean, that definitely is changing the sort of the formula. And guys like that really do change, the average donation that we're seeing people make.
I'm not sure how the timing works out coming into this particular election, but there were also changes, limits lifted on aggregate donations, meaning how much one could donate to all different candidates put together. That went away at the federal level. Did that have an impact on these midterm elections yet?
I think it did. And so that decision was, it was a Supreme Court decision called McCutcheon versus the FEC, and that was last April. And so it wasn't fully in effect this election cycle, but it definitely will be in the 2016. And it, prior to that, the maximum that an individual could give to candidates and to parties and to PACs was $123,000 every 2 years. And in last April, the Supreme Court did away with that. And so it was a huge boon to the party committees and I think to some of the candidates and some of the PACs, because you know previously they could go to a big donor and the donor said, you know, I can't give any more. I've already hit my $123,000 cap. Now the donor doesn't have that excuse anymore, and so they can keep on giving. And so in late December, when the Congress passed the Cromnibus spending bill, they inserted some language in there that made it actually expanded the amount that people can give to party committees. So before last April, you couldn't give more than $123,000 to all committees and all candidates, and now you can probably give about $1 million in 2 year cycle to the parties alone, and then you can give to as many different candidates or PACs as you can find to give to.
We're talking to Russ Choma with the Center for Responsive Politics about campaign spending in the last year's congressional races. His group's report found that it was the most expensive midterm campaign ever, even though fewer people donated money to campaigns and outside groups than in the past.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think there's too much money in political campaigns? Do you want to see more regulations? Or do you agree with the recent Supreme Court rulings that say campaign spending is a form of protected political expression? Call and join our conversation at 800-642-1234.
We'll continue the conversation after a look at the latest news with Noah Ovshinsky.
We continue our conversation now about a record-breaking election, last year's race for Congress, the most expensive midterm election ever, according to a new report. Our guest is Russ Choma, money and politics reporter for the Center for Responsive Politics.
And you can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the influence of money in politics? Do you worry about whether candidates who take donations from groups, from individuals, are beholden to them? Do you support Supreme Court decisions that say, hey, these donations are a form of political expression? They are protected by the First Amendment. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email talk@WPR.org. Russ, one angle we didn't get into about where this money is going is by party. Democrats, Republicans, how does that break down?
The way we looked at it was Team Red and Team Blue, because there's a lot of these outside groups which don't necessarily claim a specific party affiliation, but they're clearly conservative or liberal. And so looking at it that way, we figure that Team Red outspent Team Blue, but only by a small fraction. Team Red spent $1.766 billion, and Team Blue spent $1.722 billion. So it's a margin of about $44.4 million. The important thing there, though, is that is disclosed money. And when you start bringing in that non-disclosed spending that we are pretty sure is out there but can't put an exact number on, but it's probably $100 to $200 million, that probably extends the margin quite a bit, because a lot of that money is on the conservative side of things.
And now, how about how this may be an indicator for the presidential race? Are there signs you're seeing from this report from last year that may be an indication of what we're going to see in 2016?
Yeah, I mean, it's always safe to predict that the next election is going to cost more. And I think the 2016 one is going to be a big one. And I think that, you know, this pattern of fewer donors might continue, simply because there is an ability to raise more money from fewer people. And so if you're a candidate or if you have a cause, you know, instead of doing a lot of hard work, drumming up grassroots support and collecting lots and lots of $5 or $15 or $20 donations, you know, if you can go out and you can get big checks from a donor who will support your whole slate of candidates, or who will, you know, write a 6 or 7 or 8 figure check to your super PAC, it's a lot easier to go that way.
Talking to Russ Choma about a record-setting year, last year's midterm election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to a caller now. Richard is with us in Prairie du Chien. Richard, hi.
Hi. I guess the jury's in now that we no longer have a a government by the people and for the people. We have a plutocratic government by the rich and for the rich. And you can also see that in that the Democrats and the Republicans didn't really outspend each other. It sounds like the elite are hedging their bets. As I like to say, it's a party, but the people are not invited. So, you know, I personally think voting has become very meaningless because it doesn't seem like who you vote for. The Democrats pander to the working class, but they don't help the working class. At least the Republicans are honest enough to say that we're not going to help you at all. We're going to help the rich. And your guests basically has just, you know, proven that that's true.
Richard, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. Russi brought up a lot there. It goes a bit beyond your study, but is there a sense that all this money coming from fewer people now might be creating some sort of disillusionment with politics, with the election system?
I absolutely think that's true. I mean, this is an issue that no matter what side of the aisle you're on, people have expressed frustration with the amount of money in politics. You know, Republicans are concerned about, you know, some of the big liberal donors, people like Tom Steyer, some of the money coming from unions, and liberals tend to be concerned about, you know, Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers and some of the big corporate money. And honestly, you know, both sides are right. There is a lot of money coming from a lot of different places. And I think that really does frustrate people. And it also, you know, I think there's a feeling in politics that a lot of people don't like it. A lot of politicians say, well, I don't like the way things are going, but I'm not going to be the first one to pull back on this. You know, none of them want to be the guy who's fighting with one arm tied behind his back because he refused to take money from some of these big outside groups. And so it sort of creates an arms race situation.
Get back to our callers now. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see less money in politics, new laws, new regulations, or do you think the system's right? Political spending is the equivalent of free speech. Jim is with us next in Milwaukee. Jim, hi.
Hello, thanks for taking my call, and I'll take any response off the air, too. I think it's, you know, interesting that all the money that's donated to both parties and so forth is tallied up, and, you know, they're extremely large amounts, but that really doesn't tell us very much other than there's irrational amounts of money being put into it. What I'd like to know is there any research and work done on the donors, wherever they're coming from, and the amount of money that they give? Are they, what are they getting for it? Because it's not a tax write-off, so I predict there has to be something they're getting for it. Is there a company? Is there a corporation? What do they get out of it? That's what I like to see some research done. And then that's when the voters can start, you know, really nailing, you know, the irrational amounts of money that are given.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. Russ, is that something that you try to track at the Center for Responsive Politics, whether these donations maybe buy some kind of influence?
Yeah, and that's sort of the age-old question with campaign finances. What are these people giving so much money for? Because, as the caller noted, this is not, you know, a tax write-off. This is not a charity. Clearly, they're expecting something from somebody. But, you know, if you ask the donors, they say, oh, no, you know, there's nothing specific we're asking for, and the politicians will deny that they're giving anything. And in a true case of quid pro quo, where here's some money, now do this for me, that's bribery, that's illegal, the FBI will investigate it, and people do from time to time get in trouble for it. We tend to think it's more about access. And when you go down a list of a politician's big donors, it's about who they're spending time with and who they're talking to and who they're looking to for advice and who they consult with. Because the pressure, there's so much pressure on politicians to raise so much money, and they are so reliant on money and on the big checks that they spend a lot of their day raising money. And if you come to them with a big check, you're literally saving them time, and they'll give you that time to talk to you. And so I don't think it's always like a sort of a straight, you know, here's some money, now do as I tell you. But I do think it's about access, and it's about who they're surrounded by and who they're listening to.
We'll go to Carlos in Madison next. Carlos, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you think?
If you look at what is being presented to you, you know, if you look at what you have in front of you, if there's a heck of a lot more money being pumped into politics and less donors, that money's got to be coming from fewer people with a whole bunch of money. And the argument that money or contributions, political contributions, are a form of political free speech in a way anybody with an ounce of reason can see that they're trying to make money basically be equivalent to a person's voice or a person's opinion.
Gotcha. Carlos, we'll leave it there. Russ, brief thoughts. What are you watching for now as we approach 2016, briefly?
Well, you know, I think we're really trying to scrutinize these outside groups because I think that is, as we move, you know, where the Iowa caucuses are not actually that far off, and the candidates right now are engaged in the money primary. You know, they're trying to raise as much money as they can and try not only to prepare themselves but to convince other candidates that it's not worth running against them. You know, Jeb Bush has said he's got these big goals, and a lot of that is just to keep other people from jumping into the race.
Thanks to Russ Choma, Money and Politics reporter for the Center for Responsive Politics. You can see their new report at opensecrets.org.